What I tell my teams is that we have to start with what problem our customers are faced with. Whatever we bring to solve that problem is behind the covers, and it's up to us to kind of figure out what's the right thing to solve the problem.
You're tuned in to the Data Masters podcast. In each episode, we dissect the complexities of data management and discuss the data strategies that fuel innovation, growth, and efficiency. We speak with industry leaders who share how their modern approaches to data management help their organizations succeed. Let's dive straight into today's episode with Anthony Dayton.
Welcome back to Data Masters. Today, we're diving into the complex and fascinating world of data within the banking industry, an area we haven't specifically focused on before. Our guide for this exploration is Manav Misra, the Chief Data and Analytics Officer at Regions Bank, one of the nation's largest full-service banks. Manav brings a wealth of experience not just from banking, but from a unique career path spanning academia, multiple tech startups, and leadership roles within large corporations. He's passionate about a core idea, making data useful. We'll discuss his journey and how Regions Bank leverages data, his concept of data products, and why starting from the point of consumption is key to tackling data challenges. Manav, welcome to Data Masters.
Thank you, Anthony. It's great to be with you today.
Great. So as I sort of indicated as we started, you do have a bit of a unique journey to this place in your career. It's perhaps what one might think of as atypical. So as a backdrop, you started as a professor at the Colorado School of Mines. You've co-founded several startups, StorePerform, Cognolytics. Then you moved into executive roles at CenturyLink. And now, of course, you're leading data and analytics at Regions. Maybe you could walk us through that evolution and in some sense, what you bring from each of those prior experiences to Regions Bank.
Sure, I'm happy to do so. So I think maybe just even going a little bit further back, I did my undergraduate in engineering from India, came to the US to do a PhD, and took a class in artificial intelligence and just fell in love. You know, it was really something that excited me, something that energized me to really understand how the human brain works and what we could do in artificial systems to help us achieve that kind of capability. Jumped into doing research in that space. And then the natural progression from there was to go into academia to continue doing research and teaching students about the subject. But even in academia, academia focuses you to be extremely narrow and you end up becoming an expert in just one little thing and keep building on top of that. And I wasn't quite satisfied with that. I wanted to really take that and apply it to solving real problems. And so even in academia, I was dabbling in entrepreneurship, which academia fortunately allows you to do. And so got excited about that and then left academia to join a startup initially. And the world of startups was fascinating. AI was going through a winter phase at that time, but certainly the use of data was alive and well. And so we built out some companies that helped our customers leverage data effectively. And to your question of what I bring from each of those areas, from academia, the deep understanding of the AI field and the ability to then translate that into solutions. From some of the startups, we did an enterprise software startup. That software product mentality comes from working in that environment. And then we did a consulting-oriented startup, a big data advanced analytics consulting startup. And the customer focus that consulting forces you to have and understanding what their problems are and the focus on solving those problems, that comes from those startups. And then after the acquisition of the large startup, Cognolytics, I worked at CenturyLink. So being in a large company environment was also very helpful in working with the different stakeholders, understanding their needs, and then driving to meet those needs. So I bring all of that to my job at Regions, and I've been at Regions now close to 7 years, which is some sort of record, I think, for Chief Data and Analytics Officer. And then it's been a really exciting journey there.
So I think it's an interesting path through those transitions. And I was just talking to a mentee of a friend of mine, actually last night, and she is just graduating undergraduate today. And she's sort of asking the question, should I go to a big company to start and then do a startup? Do I do the startup first and then do the big company? I think many people who are graduating these days also think about, should I do a master's degree? How do you stay in academia? Or even, as you did, literally work in academia. I'm curious to, from your perspective, in a way, what advice you would give her, whether it's better to start in the startup realm and then transition to the big companies. I think a counter argument could be made that big companies provide a lot of structure, guidance. Startups can be frenetic, unorganized. These are the negative, obviously. How would you think about what advice you might give? And I suspect many listeners of the podcast are early in their career. And so thinking about career trade-offs and, you know, where to apply time.
Yeah, I don't think there's a wrong answer to this, but I think I would advise people to look at startups first. I think you're right, they are frenetic, they are disorganized, but at the same time, it's a tremendous learning environment. It's an environment where you're able to do very different, diverse types of tasks and roles, which would be a lot harder to do in a structured large company environment. So the level of learning in a startup is considerably higher. You're thrown in, you're asked to work in so many different ways, and your focus on the customer of whatever you're doing becomes extremely heightened because your survival is at stake. And all of those are good things to learn. Plus the energy of a startup, and especially being young in your career, just springboards you into a much more richer environment. So I think that's the advice that I would give folks who are just starting out.
So it strikes me, you pointed out that there were two startups or a number of them. One of them was an enterprise software focused one. One was more consulting. What role did data play? You alluded to this, but I'd love a little more detail. What role did data play in those startups? Because I want to draw the connection between the work you did with data in these startups to your overall philosophy on the use of data as we think about Regions Bank.
Yeah, the first startup that I was involved in was an e-commerce company, and I was brought in to build out all the recommendation engines in that environment. So data was extremely important. You looked at transaction data, you looked at what customers were looking at, what they were traversing in the website, and then recommending better products, more personalized experiences to them. All of those things, which was very early in the e-commerce world at that time. So we were doing a lot of those without the necessary tools that are now available.
Inventing as you were going.
So that was central there. In the second startup, the enterprise software startup, it was targeted towards large retail chains. So data was really important to them in terms of understanding which of their stores were performing better than others and what they could do at each of those stores to enhance performance. So that was the base of everything that drove the whole enterprise software there. And then the third one, we started the company in 2009, coming right out of the financial crisis. And the whole idea that we had was that we could use the emerging Hadoop platform and the big data capabilities that were becoming available, layered on with the modeling from machine learning and statistical modeling as well, to help banks understand risk at a much deeper level than they had been able to do up to that point. So all of them had data as the central underlying foundation, even though we were solving very different problems.
I think that's a good point you make. The focus on big data, the idea that more data is better, in a way that stands in contrast to the way you might think about or what you've stressed around making data useful. Sometimes the most useful data is actually less data or certainly more aggregated data or more specific data, filtered data, et cetera. So how do you contrast this concept of the sheer bigness of data, just sheer quantity, over making data useful?
What I tell my teams is that we have to start with what problem our quote-unquote customers are faced with. And these customers could be our internal bankers at Regions, for instance, or they could be our bank's customers themselves. Whatever we bring to solve that problem is behind the covers, and it's up to us to kind of figure out what's the right thing to solve the problem. Sometimes that is indeed small data. Sometimes the largeness of the data is a benefit, and especially when you're dealing with, you know, machine learning models, which will benefit from having a wider view into the data landscape. And when you get to large language models, that's absolutely the case. But all of that should be behind the covers. I mean, we need to figure out what's the best data assets, the best software solution, the best modeling technique to solve the problem. And Occam's razor is an important part of what we should be looking at. Keep it as simple as you need it to be, so that it can be the most effective and address the problem that the customer has.
So you've used this term data products within the bank as a framing tool, as a mechanism of almost branding the work, connecting it to the business value, to the challenge that the users articulated for you. Share your view of how you define a data product. It feels like one of these terms that's gotten a lot of oxygen, a lot of airtime, a lot of conversation. And yet, in a funny way, I see that there's not that much use of data products in real world environments. So it's really interesting to see you championing it at Regions Bank.
Yeah. So when I joined Regions in 2018, I needed some anchor around which both my team as well as the business units that we were serving could rally around. And it needed to be this concept that we were solving a problem end to end, and that this was a software product, just like a software product that our business partners may go and purchase from a vendor outside. They understood what that was. They understood that it came as a complete solution. It wasn't something piecemeal that they had to patch together and then maintain over time. And it improved over time. There were releases that provided greater and greater functionality. There was somebody there who was managing it and maintaining that product over time. All those concepts were clear to them. So the use of the term product was important in that context. It also helped my team to rally around that concept, because oftentimes, work that is done in a large company setting is done as a project. It's a one and done. We come in, work on a project, finish it, hand it off, and then move on to something else. And that won't be the case if it was a software product that you were building out. And then the term data was important because this wasn't just a general software product, right? So it wasn't an application we were building out that didn't have any focus on the data and the machine learning and AI components that drove it. So I coined the term data product. I don't think anybody else was using that term at that time. Since then, there have been many, or you know, at least one alternative definition of data product that's come about. But my focus is an end-to-end software asset that solves a specific set of problems for our internal customers at the bank.
One of the things I really like about that is the focus on the customer. The consumer of the data as the main unit of measure as to whether or not the data asset is successful or useful. I think there's a tendency inside organizations to think about the extreme version of this would be just data exports. Like we're just going to create more versions, more copies, more types of data assets without any real sense of the utility that they provide to the customer and thinking about trade-offs associated with that utility. Is that a fair way of framing it, or would you disagree?
That's exactly it. The problem that I have with the other definition of data product, which is a data asset that is made available to multiple consumers with well-defined contracts in terms of what you're getting and what you'll get, is that it's not a usable asset out of the box. Somebody still has to do something to make it usable. And oftentimes the business person who is looking to make use of that data doesn't have those skills to be able to make it usable. When we look at a data product, it is something which is complete. It's got a user interface. We've thought about things like what's the best way to make this usable for a business user. We measure the impact it's having. We measure usage, how many people are logging in, just all the things that a software vendor would want to do to ensure that their product is being useful and is having an impact to the problem they were trying to solve. We do with our data products as well.
Experience Tamer's proven data-centric AI, engineered to speed the discovery, enrichment, and maintenance of the golden records businesses need to accelerate growth. Tamer's expertise in quickly and accurately unifying large amounts of data across disparate sources gets results faster at a lower cost compared to traditional master data management or DIY solutions. Stop wasting time on bad data. Visit www.tamer.com. That's TAMR.com to see results now.
One of the key dimensions for any product company is user feedback, quality measures, thinking about, you've mentioned one already, which is, do people actually use it? Do they log in and use it? But even beyond the simple using of it, it's like, is it fit to purpose? If I had extra time to improve it, where would I focus energy? How do you think about quality in the context of this data product model that you've developed?
Yeah, and one of the things that I did was I created a new role at the bank, which didn't exist before, and I don't think exists at a lot of institutions, which is, we called it a data product partner, but it was essentially a product management role. It's the owner of the product. It's somebody who gets up and thinks about all those things that you talked about every day. Am I solving the real problem? Are people actually getting benefit from it? How do I measure that impact? And for every product, it's different. Sometimes it's an efficiency play, and for everything, we build a business case, and then we look at what the baseline is, and then look at those dimensions that product is supposed to move the needle on. It could be additional revenue that is being generated by recommending that our bankers talk to our customers about a specific product, personalized offering that we may have for them. It may be a cost save play. It may be a risk reduction play. But each of those have metrics and measures that we are tracking, and we report on those on a quarterly basis to our business stakeholders, saying this module and this product generated this additional revenue. And so they can go back and track against the business case that it is doing what we expected the product to be doing.
So I think that's exactly right. And just to something I've said many times before, I'm probably on this podcast and elsewhere, is that there are only really three reasons any organization makes a software investment or an investment in a data product, and that is to either drive revenue, reduce cost, or reduce risk. And almost everything we do can be categorized into one of those three categories, and those become the basis for the business case. And I think that maps pretty cleanly to the way you just articulated it.
Absolutely. So those are exactly the things that we have the team focus on. And again, this also, it's a tool for my team as well as for my actual users of the data product. Because oftentimes a data team could get enamored by a new technology or a new tool that has come out, and they lose track of why they're doing what they're doing. And then they chase after a new algorithm and say, get excited about implementing that algorithm, even though it may deliver zero value to the business.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. And I think forcing or helping a data team to re-articulate what they're working on in the context of the value or utility that it provides against those three categories is a strong best practice. You'd indicated when we first talked that you'd actually added the term analytics into your title. What's your view? I mean, obviously, chief data officer is a very common title. So you've very purposely brought this concept of analytics into your role. Is this connected to our prior conversation?
Absolutely. So when the executive recruiter reached out to me, the original title for the job was chief data officer. And I recommended that analytics be added to the title. And the purpose was, again, that focus on the utility or the impact or value that data could drive to the business. And analytics was a good way of capturing that at that time. So just to complete that thought, the goal was to, again, for the leadership at the bank, for other folks at the bank, to really also understand that this wasn't going to be a role focused on the defensive aspects of data, which is something that is more common for the chief data officer role, governance, quality, controls, all those things. And yes, all of those things were important, but they were just one side of the coin. The other side of the coin was, how do you drive value from that data to the business directly?
So they're in service of the utility aspect of it, not as the primary driver of the work. You mentioned this before, but I wanted to come back to it and maybe put a bit of a sharper point on it. This idea of data products, as you've articulated and designed them within Regions Bank, in contrast to perhaps a more general industry definition of data products, and maybe to lead the witness slightly or color your commentary, my sense is that a lot of times data products become highly technical and really focused on the data and the mechanics of the pipeline, as opposed to the product dimension of it. But maybe I'm wrong. But share with me your view on what the industry gets wrong with data products and what Regions Bank gets so right.
Well, and it's a point I made before. It's the trap that data teams can fall into, which is that they get excited about creating a data asset and saying, hey, here's a data asset, go use it. Well, you know, again, sometimes people are able to use it, but it's an incomplete picture. And a much more valuable picture is one where that data asset is indeed used to drive value for the business. And then the business owners or business users don't have to worry about how to make use of that data.
Yeah, maybe it's this idea of, for software companies, there's often this mistake, which is that if we just build amazing software, then well, that's the success metric. It's how amazing the features and functionality are. And I often see this as the company will view it within itself and look at all the cool features we built without any sense of whether those are useful to. It's almost like a bad feature that's used a lot is more valuable than an amazing feature that has no utility.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the trap that I was talking about, that we get so enamored and excited about our things that interest us as opposed to what drives value for the users of the product. So this new role that I created, the data product partner, the terms were designed with intention. So data product, I described why I came up with that term. But then partner is like a consulting company partner. So it's somebody who really understands their customers, understands their pain points, comes with suggestions, and delivers something of value to their customers. So that's that role that sits in that middle between the folks that can get excited about an algorithm or a new technology and so on, and then the folks that are actually going to be using it. And a lot of the data product partners we've hired at Regions actually came from the business unit that we were working with.
So they really have a sense for the challenge, the business challenge and opportunity that the new data product is supposed to solve. Yeah, so this also leads to, I think, another challenge with chief data officers in general, but and not to be disparaging, but data people, almost by their nature are focused on the data. And there's this sense, I think, that they begin the conversation looking at, what are my sources of data? What's the quality in my sources? They're trying to do what we would call source-based governance, trying to look across the landscape of all of the different sources of data. And that is an overwhelming task, arguably an impossible task. But I think the point you're making, if I can put words in your mouth, is that it's also not that valuable a task, because just looking at these sources of data doesn't speak to whether the use case that the data is designed to solve and whether there's a definition of a consumption endpoint that would actually solve a business problem. So to put this back to you for a minute, I think when we were preparing for this conversation, you told me that as you joined Regions, the initial focus or the belief was that the focus should be on fix the data, go to the source, really understand the source. And you took a very different approach. But do you mind sharing that?
Yeah, Anthony, so that's exactly it. So when I joined Regions, the role was created and then some of the leadership said, come in and fix the data for us. Well, that's something that a lot of chief data officers get caught into. And I'd seen that in the consulting clients that I was working with, where that's a boil the ocean impossible task. You start at the sources and you look at everything around you and you spend years trying to organize that data, put governance on it, put quality measures on it, and you can never catch up. And so the business leaders, after a couple of years, say, where is that person that we hired as chief data officer? We haven't seen
him.
They've
been toiling in the basement. We haven't seen them since.
And so what I focused, and fortunately I got buy-in from the leadership at Regions, was, look, let me start with what value I can drive for you, how I can key problems that you're faced with. And as we look at those consumption endpoints, we are going to bring in data into centralized stores. We're going to put the right governance on it, the right control on it. It's not going to be everything, but all the data that is needed to build a useful, impactful data product, we will put all these layers of controls on. And we've done that as layers of the onion over time. And we continue to do that. We always start with the data consumption endpoints and then work backwards to look at where the data is coming from and how do we address all the things we need to address. Now, there are situations where there's a regulatory need to focus on a specific data assets and we need to take the lens of the source from that standpoint. But most of the work we do is from the consumption backwards to create the data landscape across regions, which has matured over time to meet the needs of how that data will be consumed.
I think that also allows you to be far more innovative and more innovative quickly. The idea of cycle time is extraordinarily important in any product development effort. It's also important from your experience, I would imagine, in consulting. It's like that iterative process is really important. One of the really dark parts about focusing on source-based governance is, and you sort of alluded to this, is that you go dark. You just go away for a long period of time trying to do a bunch of work with the data, and you're not working with any feedback from the people that actually use that data to make decisions. And a funny way or a simple way of saying this is sometimes good is good enough. Like there isn't a need for the nth level of detail in some cases.
Yeah. And the other thing we've done is when we set up our data governance program, we set it up in a federated manner where each group at the bank that owned assets and had or had use for data assets had a group data officer. And yes, they had day jobs and they were doing other things, but they were the primary person in that unit that were responsible for helping us get to governance and quality of the data assets that were used by that unit. And the use of that data was in data products, it was in reporting and analytics, it was in models that they may build for predicting risk, etc. But that partnership was really important. And when they saw that how data was used, they saw the importance of ensuring governance and quality of that data much more. If we were to do that kind of in a vacuum and say, hey, we need your data governed and we need quality measures on it, et cetera, they say, why? Why are we doing all this?
Well, then it feels like a form of control as rather than a natural feature or benefit to the consumption.
That's right. And it has truly become a partnership rather than us being just bringing the hammer down on people.
Yeah, like the idea of governance, control, feedback, these are features, not control mechanisms. These are ways that we bring the consumption experience back into the development of the data product. Again, this is like everybody wants to be involved because they know that their feedback is listened to and it's part of making the next and therefore better version of whatever the data product is and creating that virtuous iterative cycle.
Exactly.
So, Manav, I appreciate you making the time today to join us on Data Masters. What I really appreciate about your story is bringing both an academic and product-oriented startup get things done type experience into Regions Bank and really helping build that innovative culture built on data products, focused on delivering business value at the point of consumption. And I think it's a really great and exciting example of how someone can make a really big difference in building a data-driven culture at Regions Bank. So I appreciate you making the time.
I appreciate your time as well, Anthony, and the questions. Hopefully this is useful for some of the folks that are listening in.
Thanks for joining us for the latest episode of the Data Masters podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on today's show. And if you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode.